Resuming with State versus Jerome Shaw. We'll hear from C.J. Griffin next.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I will keep my presentation short, although I'm sure you may have questions for me. This is a case where the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey is not participating to weigh in on the specific facts of the case, but rather to weigh in on the legal issue regarding grand jury resubmissions and to ask the court to adopt some rule to provide guidance to attorneys and trial courts below. I'm not going to rediscuss everything that we included in our brief in terms of the historical role of the grand jury and notions of fundamental fairness and those sort of things that the defendant discussed in his opening. So I want to get straight to the test that we think would be fundamentally fair and that we did highlight in our brief, and that is that after a first no bill, a prosecutor should be permitted to resubmit the matter to a second grand jury, and that's without any new evidence, sort of as a matter of routine. Taking into consideration that, of course, all the normal rules apply to grand juries, so if there's prosecutorial misconduct or exculpatory information is not presented, all of those remain arguments that a defendant can use to challenge an indictment returned by the second grand jury. We think that this gives the prosecutor discretion to resubmit the matter where the evidence against the defendant is very strong or overwhelming, but for some reason the grand jury didn't return an indictment. And we outline some of those reasons in our brief, that sometimes popular defendants are very hard to indict. I'm thinking of police brutality cases where people tend to give significant deference to police officers. We want the prosecutor to be able to present the strong evidence to a second grand jury in that circumstance. And the Attorney General also outlined some reasons why there might be a resubmission or a no bill in the first grand jury, such as multiple grand jurors being absent or relying on transcripts and those sort of things. So in those circumstances, we want the prosecutor to have discretion to make a second presentation without new evidence. But if the second grand jury returns a no bill, then I think we're entering into that territory where there are some red flags and where you have to consider the role of the grand jury to serve as a safeguard against innocent people being indicted. And so in that case, we do not think the prosecutor can automatically go to a third grand jury. We think that there should be some limitation placed there. And what we've proposed is that there should be new evidence and that there should be some intervention and approval from the court. And we didn't discuss exactly what the court might consider in determining whether to grant approval for the third presentation. Both parties, the defendant and the state, or the attorney general at least, have discussed the body factors as being relevant considerations. In some ways they are, in other ways they're not particularly relevant. But nonetheless, we think that having this limitation on a third grand jury requiring new evidence and requiring some court intervention really does respect the historical role of the grand jury and why we have a constitutional provision that requires one. And it also provides some level of fundamental fairness to the defendant and causes them from being subjected to undue anxiety, embarrassment, and expense. And I know sometimes grand jury proceedings, and maybe often they're secret, but they're not always secret, and very often defendants do know that the investigation is going on, and very often the public also knows that there's a grand jury going on, and again, in those circumstances, I'm thinking of instances where the announcement of arrest has been made, and then you're waiting for the return of an indictment. That being said, that's a test that we propose that we think would meet the standards of fundamental fairness. There's obviously information that needs to be filled in there in terms of what the judge might consider when giving permission for a third presentation. And that's where we think The court could either provide guidance or that this could be referred to the Criminal Practice Committee, where practitioners can make recommendations to the court based on their own experience, based on their expertise, their knowledge of the law, and we think that would be an appropriate exercise by this court to do, and we think it's fully within your authority to make this rule and not to rely on the legislature to place limits, and we think that it respects the grand jury process and also respects the defendant's rights.
So does the addition of the expert witness in the third grand jury this time meet your requirement of new evidence?
So we're not really taking a position on the facts of the case. And I say it would almost be unfair for me to take a position on the facts of the case both to the defendant and to the state and to the court, because I haven't even really seen the record. I've seen the information in the appellate division's brief and the information as written in the briefs, but I haven't seen the actual transcripts even see what the testimony is.
Enough said. Understood.
So it would seem to me that one obvious factor, and maybe the predominant factor in addition to new evidence, is whether or not the previous presentations presented evidence that would constitute probable cause.
That would be a factor. I think the sufficiency of the evidence would be one factor, yes. And the court, if there's clearly probable cause, then that's something that the court might consider. At the same time, we think that the court should give consideration of the fact that, hey, two grand juries have looked at this and might be seeing something different. But I think there's more than just that factor that would be at play. That would be one, but there are probably others.
McClung, you're here as a friend of the court. What other factors other than that and new evidence, and assuming that there wasn't prosecutorial misconduct in the first two presentations?
Assuming no prosecutorial misconduct, we think that there needs to be new evidence. And perhaps it would be that new evidence alone or paired with probable cause would be sufficient. We also don't necessarily disagree that some of the considerations in a body might come into play. But we think that, you know, referring this to the Criminal Practice Committee to come up with specific factors might be wise. But what we think is most important is not that the appellate division's decision stands, because the appellate division's decision essentially says, yeah, more than one is fine. We think our Supreme Court would not let it be limitless, but we're not going to tell you what the limit is. And so there's no guidance to a trial court that's faced with the third time.
That's why you hear it. They left it up to us. They were basically signaling.
Well, that was a very clear very clear request for the court to take this case. And so,
and you're suggesting diplomatically we send it to criminal practice in an area that judicial oversight is minimal to begin with. You want us to delegate that?
I think delegating it would be wise, but I think that there also is, the court does have authority to create its own rule and test. You have not shied away from doing that with regard to grand juries before.
Your reference to intervention by the court or perhaps even pre-approval was left a lot of room in your suggestions, but does it leave enough room to make it something that would have to be initiated by the defendant as opposed to the prosecutor having to come forward? Do you understand my question?
I think what you're, let me make sure that I do. I think you're asking, does the prosecutor affirmatively need to come forward
Correct.
For the third?
Correct, because I'm looking at page 19 of your brief. You just say approval by the assignment judge this morning or this afternoon. You're saying now maybe there should be some intervention or pre-approval by the court, but it's unclear whether that intervention or pre-approval has to be sought by the prosecutor before the third application is made to the grand jury, or does the defendant have to seek that intervention?
I think what we're proposing in the brief is that it would be before. I don't know that.
And who seeks it?
It would be the prosecutor. And I don't know that we would necessarily disagree if it was after, but I some of those issues about, especially when you get to defendants that targets that know that the investigation is ongoing, then you get into some of the Abbate factors and some of the concerns that it's causing anxiety and expense to the target of the investigation.
From an efficiency state of point of view, do you think it's preferable to do it prior to presenting to the grand jury or afterwards?
Certainly from an efficiency perspective, it would be preferable before. And also, I think the court would then be actually reviewing the evidence, the sufficiency of the evidence, and whether there's probable cause, versus letting the third grand jury decision perhaps weigh into that decision.
Why not just make it a defendant's call as to whether to request that a limit be put on? In other words, maybe obviate the need for a lot of adjudications if it's always going to have to be requested.
Right.
Versus the defendant, now there are two, and leaving aside the kind of peculiarities of the procedural history on the second one here, but if there are two no bills,
right,
defendant then says two's enough and goes to the court.
Right, and if the defendant is not aware until after the third, then they would have to incur expense to make the motion as
right,
well.
Right, makes the motion to dismiss the indictment at that point.
Whereas
right?
If the court just doesn't permit the third, then the target would not necessarily have to incur that expense to try to dismiss the third.
If we were to proceed in that way, then you'd have to have the prosecution notify the defendant after the no bill and then provide the evidence of the grand jury transcripts in both of the first two presentations as well. How does that compare to current practice?
Mm-hmm. So that differs. I think that's something, part of the standard that we haven't worked through, and that part of the reason why we recommend that this go to the criminal practice committee.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the standard is different if it's an ex parte request for permission than if it's not.
Providing the grand jury transcript should not be a problem because we permit access to the grand jury transcripts when there is an indictment. I mean, so that's not a problem. And if the state has fallen short in the first two presentations, then the next thing that may be offensive is the third presentation. So it would seem to me to make sense that the prosecutor give notice to the defendant, who may not even know about the grand jury presentations, and bring the matter before the assignment judge. How difficult would that be?
I don't think that would be difficult. I think that would be more fair, to the defendant, fundamental fairness. I think that at this point, this person has already had two grand juries conclude that there's no crime there. There's not probable cause for a crime to indict him mm-hmm. or her. And so I think at that point, the defendant should know about the proceedings and should be able to have someone advocate for why the assignment judge shouldn't grant permission for that third presentation.
So if I understand, and I know you didn't go this far in your brief,
mm-hmm.
you're proposing a scheme now that would provide for an adversary proceeding before a presentation of the grand jury, albeit a third presentation.
I think the defendant should be aware that this is happening. And the defendant should have, I think, some say in this third time. It's not, we are going beyond the usual grand jury procedures already when there's this third resubmission, because usually there's there's a first, and then there's a motion to dismiss the indictment, and at that point there's some adversary there.
To follow your proposal, why wouldn't there be sufficient confidence that an assignment judge would protect against fundamental fairness concerns? State comes forward, makes a presentation, and the assignment judge can then probe, approve, disapprove. Why the need to turn it into an adversary proceeding under the fundamental fairness doctrine?
Well, in our test, we don't propose that exact procedure, and I think that's part of why I'm struggling with the answer to the question, because we initially weren't sure whether to propose a specific test to the court and instead to just refer it, ask the court to refer it to a criminal practice committee. But then we worked amongst ourselves to figure out, well, what would be, we want a hard limit. So what would be a good limit? What is a limit that respects the the historical role of the grand jury, the constitutional role of the grand jury that doesn't let a prosecutor resubmit a case after time after time and after time again. So we propose one limit. That's you get one free the second time. If there's a no bill, then there needs to be evidence there, new evidence, and then there needs to be approval by the court. We wanted to propose some test to the court rather than just basically do what the appellate division has said. But I think we're also saying there are probably other ways to accomplish this goal, and that the Criminal Practice Committee could flesh out what those details are, perhaps better than we can.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ms. Patton.
May it please the court. Defendants who have faced the stresses and publicity of multiple Pettit jury trials are on completely different footing than defendants pre-indictment. The modified Abadi factors proposed by the defense would create a standard for grand jury presentations that is more stringent than that applied after multiple mistrials, when such a standard is both unnecessary and unsound. The decision to represent a case to the grand jury is a charging decision made by the state in an exercise of prosecutorial discretion. Such a decision is not unfettered, as the state already faces a number of legal, ethical, and practical considerations relating to first presentations and representations alike. Moreover, our courts are already equipped to review such charging decisions under the existing abuse of discretion standard. The representations here were not unduly burdensome on the defendant, despite the defense's broad claims otherwise. First, there was only one no bill, and but for the trial court's erroneous dismissal of that first indictment, there would only have been the need for one additional presentation to the grand jury. As the appellate division below found, the first indictment was valid. The evidence presented a strong case of probable cause, and there was no proof or even suggestion of prosecutorial vindictiveness or an abuse of discretion. Each individual grand jury presentation in this matter was fundamentally fair. Likewise, there is nothing inherently unfair in multiple grand jury presentations. Grand jury presentations are already rightfully and carefully regulated by our courts to ensure that defendants are protected from any bias on the part of a grand jury. Further, as a matter of practice, representations are never brought before the same grand jury panel. Thus, the independent function of a panel hearing a case is not compromised in a second presentation. For all of these reasons, Your Honors, while this court unquestionably has the power to intervene if it would like, there is simply no need to do so here. That concludes my opening statement.
Can you tell us how often the state represents after a no bill?
I don't have exact statistics on how often a second presentation is brought. However, it is extremely unheard of to bring a third presentation, and in this case, it would not have even happened but for the trial court's erroneous dismissal of the first indictment.
Can you give us any idea as to the scope of representations after a no bill?
As to representations on a third presentation, it's my understanding from the Attorney General's office, who can maybe speak better to the numbers, that third presentations simply don't happen.
And can an assistant prosecutor simply represent on his or her own decision? Is there any prosecutorial oversight built into the system?
There's absolutely oversight built in. There are chiefs of the grand jury sections which constantly are monitoring what the assistant prosecutors are doing and what their presentations are being brought to grand juries. And in the case of if there's an initial no bill and the case is being brought for a second presentation, there will certainly have been a discussion between a grand jury chief and likely the appellate section of an office before a second presentation is brought.
Now, you said that third presentations or more are rare. Theoretically, under your argument, there would be no limit to the prosecutor going before a third or a fourth grand jury?
Theoretically, that's correct, Your Honor. There would be no hard line limit. It would be governed by the already existing abuse of discretion standard if there was to become a situation where there was a third presentation, but that existing abuse of discretion standard would also apply to a second presentation, and the defendant has a right to make a motion to dismiss based on a second presentation under the same standard.
You're saying that to the extent it happens, it's extraordinarily rare to have a third, and you're counting this one as a second.
That's correct.
If it's so extraordinarily rare, maybe even unheard of, to go for a third, then it certainly wouldn't be difficult presenting new evidence and seeking permission of the assignment judge, no?
It may not be extraordinarily difficult to seek any approval from an assignment judge for a third presentation. However, it would just be unnecessary. The abuse of discretion standard would already govern if there is an indictment after a third or subsequent presentation, and it would sufficiently cover a defendant's motion.
Is it fair to say that even re-presentations are fairly rare?
Yes, that's correct.
If limits should be imposed, who should be imposing them? The court or the legislature?
The legislature should be imposing them, Your Honor.
Even though grand juries are an arm of the court?
Yes, Your Honor. Grand juries are an arm of the court, and this court would be well within its rights to impose any limitations it so sought. However, as other jurisdictions have done, if there is a hard line limitation that the legislature sees may be a problem in the future, they should be the ones imposing that. But right now, there is simply no problem that needs a solution from this court.
So assuming limits would be imposed for the purpose of the question, what does it then mean to say the grand jury is an arm of the court if you think the court should not step in under those circumstances?
It's the state's position that if the court does not need to step in, that the grand jury, if there is a limitation set by the legislature, would obviously need to be regulated by that, but it does not need to be done by this court at this time.
I understand your answer, and I'd like you to assume that for purposes of this question, limits would be imposed. Why not the court?
It simply does not need to be a role fulfilled by the court. The legislature is fully capable of setting those limitations, just as other jurisdictions have done.
We have, what distinguishes our jurisdiction from many other jurisdictions is that we have constitutional rulemaking authority over our courts, which would include the grand jury. And many jurisdictions handle the grand jury differently. Some of them don't even think it's an arm of the court. So I don't know that you can really seek support from other jurisdictions. And I don't know why you would think that we would, since we have rulemaking authority over the court, why we wouldn't be the appropriate body to make those decisions.
The state's position is that while this court has been a vanguard in other situations creating rules for the grand jury, it simply has not been done in any other jurisdiction. And the court would be well within its right to create the limitations itself if it so chooses. However, the state believes that the legislature would be the appropriate mechanism as there is no problem that this court needs to create the rule for. In essence, the court would be creating an unnecessary rule for a problem that does not exist.
Questions, anyone? Anything else you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Oberholzer.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I do not have much to add to what the state has said, but I would point out that the Attorney General actually reached out to every county on the issue of how often third presentations are made, and when there is no new evidence, it is simply not done. Third presentations without additional evidence are not done. They do occasionally arise when there is new evidence that comes to light, but it's a very rare situation. And so the situation presented in the question that was certified to this court just simply doesn't come to light. Solution in search of a problem, essentially.
Can you tell us how many second presentations after no bill?
I do not have that number. I'm sorry.
That was not part of the inquiry.
It was not part of the question I asked of the counties. It's just simply not a situation. It's something that the prosecutors are already policing themselves on. It's not something that this court needs to come up with a rule on because it's simply not being done, whether because it's an ethical consideration or a practical consideration. There, you know, if we're not getting indictments on a second presentation, it's a waste of resources and a waste of time, and it's simply not the right thing to do. We can't
get
a
second jury. Has the Attorney General given prosecutors any guidance, formal or informal, about how to approach when to proceed with second presentations?
Has the Attorney General
given any guidance to prosecutors, either formally or informally, in terms of determining when and how to oversee decisions for second presentations?
No, the Attorney General's manual on grand juries does not provide any guidance on it, and obviously we have not seen the need to do it either, because we have not seen a problem arising in the counties internally.
You don't see disparities arising?
No.
You've said there are hardly any third presentations without new evidence.
Right.
How many are there with new evidence?
I didn't get any numbers about third presentations at all. I'm actually assuming that if, you know, we have a murder case that we've presented twice without a body, if a body showed up, we might present it a third time. That's an assumption on my part that might be the type of case we might present. But I don't actually know of any third presentations at all.
Was the inquiry posed in order to elicit that answer, or you were just expecting that it would? I don't know what question you asked.
I asked if anybody, any county, had ever presented a case to three grand juries without new evidence, and
without
the answer was
evidence.
No.
Okay.
It sounds to me that you wouldn't necessarily be, averse to the ACLU's recommendation?
In theory, no, but again, I don't think that this court's practice has been to create solutions to problems that don't exist. The Abadi rule, for example, was created because there was a problem that needed to be addressed. This isn't a problem that needs to be addressed if there's no problem. So I don't see a reason for this court to create a solution.
If the court has a different view on that, you've heard the discussion about several relevant factors. Your brief puts forth 10 factors. Is there a need to go beyond the three that we have discussed so far?
No, we set forth a number of factors we thought might be taken into consideration. But of course it is up to this court which factors they consider relevant. Brainstorming, giving you some to take into consideration, of course. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't think there is a reason for a test at all.
Understood. Anything else you'd like to present? Other questions?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Hellman, did you want to offer rebuttal?
Just very quickly, Your Honors. I think it's clear from the presentation from the state and the AG that there are no rules here. Nobody knows what the rules are because there aren't any. And that's exactly what the appellate division was calling out for here, some sort of standard. And I'm advocating for you today. I think it makes sense to consider a no bill relevant, whether or not that means the prosecutor will be prohibited the time after that from presenting. That will be within each trial judge's discretion to be able to determine in the context of the case, considering all of those options. And just to point to a couple of words that this court has used to describe the grand jury. You've called it a shield, a safeguard, a fundamental protection that's been embedded in our law for more than two centuries. And if a no bill is simply irrelevant, it's hard for me to square how that counts as a fundamental protection and how we entrust everyday citizens in New Jersey for making these kinds of decisions and maybe disagreeing with what a judge would have decided had he gotten the same evidence. And that's the very point. And just briefly then, on the rareness of second presentations, I'm not quite sure why the statistics are so difficult to figure that out, but I think the fact that it's so exceedingly rare for a second presentation is exactly why the first no bill should have some meaning. Because at least federally, in 99.95% of cases, the prosecutor gets what they want, and they get the indictment. And so what is the point of the entire system if in one half of 1% of cases where the grand jury actually has the gall to disagree, that we just ignore it? And that would be...
Aren't you ignoring that the grand jury perhaps got it wrong, and that's why there's a second bill? Because when your client's indicted or convicted by a jury, you have a right to appeal. This is similar. In this case, as you admitted, there was probable cause. So the grand jury got it wrong. So why disallow a second?
I don't think the grand jury got it wrong, because I think the only it's not just probable cause to consider. I mean, as this court said in Murphy, we're looking at prosecutorial misconduct, and we're looking at, were the grand jurors biased here for some reason? I'm not suggesting that's the case, but this court's review.
What is the prosecutorial misconduct in this case, in the first grand jury? What is the misconduct in the first or second grand jury that you
In the second grand jury, there were certainly two aspects of misconduct. There was allowing for the presentation of his criminal history, which I think was, when we compare the first grand jury to the second grand jury, the only thing the state elicited the second time was that they allowed him to say, oh, well, yeah, he told me he had a weapons type offense.
No misconduct in the first grand jury?
I don't think, I mean, I think there was, it wouldn't rise to the level of misconduct for dismissing the indictment.
And you've already, in the first round of arguments, in effect conceded that there was adequate probable cause in the first grand jury.
I don't think my opinion on the probable cause is relevant to this court or is appropriate for this court to take into consideration. I just wanted to make the point that there was a no bill. So the grand jurors were expressing something. It doesn't mean that it would forever bar this case or another case from being re-prosecuted, but it should matter. There should be some value to what we're asking these grand jurors to decide. And allowing for a second freebie, it shouldn't be a freebie the first time anyway. It shouldn't be considered that when you're presenting to a grand jury. It certainly shouldn't be the second time. And a no bill or a second no bill would, of course, just make it more difficult or change this court's analysis, but it should have some effect because the grand jury is a gatekeeper, and that's what this
so
court
I'm
has.
Under your approach, I'm trying to think what the purpose would be going before a judge in a case where the first presentation contained probable cause to support all the charges. Like what else, and assuming no prosecutorial misconduct, what else would the judge be considering?
I mean, there's nothing to evaluate in terms of dismissing the first indictment because there wasn't one. So the only thing upon the second presentation that would be judicially reviewable is the indictment. And so we compare that to the first no bill, but we can't look back and say, oh, because we thought there was probable cause the first time, that justifies everything that's going afterwards. I mean,
the prosecutor would just go before the judge after the first presentation and say, I can't, there's no explanation.
I mean, for why
the grand jury did what it did. Here's the transcript, there's probable cause, there's no prosecutorial misconduct, and may we represent the case again? Like, what else would the judge ask for?
I mean, if you're asking for, should there be a rule to, would it be burdensome to have the prosecutor ask for permission? I don't think so, and based on the fact that
what I'm asking you, what would be the purpose in those cases where the first presentation contained probable cause and nothing in the record suggests prosecutorial misconduct?
The purpose is respect for the institution of the grand jury and giving it value and meaning to the citizens of New Jersey. Would that mean in such a case that the second presentation would be barred? In your simple scenario, likely not. But we could ask what the purpose of having the grand jury in the first place is. Why don't we just have prosecutors go to the court and say, I think there's probable cause for this. Can I please have an indictment? Why do we ask them at all?
Well, look. There isn't an indictment unless the grand jury returns one.
But why?
Why?
Because that's in our constitution,
why?
You
want me to go back to the Magna Carta or something? Or, I mean,
We have another argument.
I don't think we have time. My simple point here, Your Honors, is that the appellate division was asking for guidance. It seems like there's not a lot of rules constricting prosecutorial behavior. I believe it's this court's role and authority and constitutional mandate to at least say something. So
I want to hear you ask him more questions. that was interesting.
It was a pleasure, Justice Alford.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel for the helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement. Next is in the matter.